This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. Welcome to AM. I'm Sabra Lane, coming to you from Nipaluna, Hobart. Tougher privacy rules and massive fines are on the cards for companies in Australia after a cyber attack on Optus, which has stolen the personal data of almost 10 million people. It's one of Australia's biggest data breaches, and the federal government's blasted Optus for failing to stop what it's describing as a basic hack. It's left millions of customers scrambling to shore up their personal security and Optus struggling to explain what's gone on. Our senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan, has been speaking with Kelly Bayer-Rosmarin, the CEO of Optus.
Well, Kelly Bayer-Rosmarin, can you tell us who was responsible for this cyber attack and just how security was breached at Optus?
I wish that we knew who had done this, but I can say we're working very closely with the authorities, both the Australian Centre for Cybersecurity and the Australian Federal Police. And we're working closely and still have the aim of figuring out who did this, finding them, stopping them, and retrieving the data.
If you can't say who's responsible, can we assume that you or the Federal Police have a suspect or suspects in mind?
I really can't answer those questions, Peter. What I can say is that we have Australia's best and brightest working round the clock, working together to see if we can ensure that no harm comes to any customer as a result of this data theft.
Can you confirm that there's a $1 million ransom demand and that you have a week to pay it, otherwise that Optus data will be sold?
We have seen that there is a post like that on the dark web, and the Australian Federal Police is all over that. They're looking into every possibility, and they're using the time available to see if they can track down that particular criminal and verify if they're bona fide.
Cybersecurity Minister Claire O'Neill says Optus effectively left a window open for the cyber criminals, that this was a basic security breach. Can you confirm the customer database was inadvertently opened to the internet on a test network?
No, well, thank you for letting me address a lot of the misinformation that's out there. And unfortunately, I think our briefing of the minister happened after she gave that interview. Given we're not allowed to say much because the police has asked us not to, what I can say that hopefully should help people understand that it's not as being portrayed is that our data was encrypted and we have multiple layers of protection. So it is not the case of having some sort of completely exposed API sitting out there. In addition, what's really important for people to understand is that we have had the Australian Centre for Cybersecurity actually scan our perimeter. We have done that with an independent cyber expert as well. And that is because we want to make sure the environment is secure and that we don't have any high-risk open issues of the sort that's been described in the media. We invest heavily in our cyber defences and we really are doing everything we can to ensure that our environment is secure.
So you're sure that this wasn't human error or a massive bungle by Optus?
We definitely know that this is the work of some bad actors, and really they are the villains in this story. Now, of course, we will investigate thoroughly how it could happen, what went wrong, how we could have avoided it. And later on, if something comes out of that that indicates that Optus has made an error or done something bad, we will, of course, take full accountability for that. But there's a time and a place for that, and we remain focused on doing everything we can to make sure no harm comes to customers as a result of this theft.
The federal government's made the point that if this had happened in Europe, Optus would be facing potential penalties in the hundreds of millions of dollars. Would you support a tougher penalty regime here in Australia?
Look, honestly, I'm not sure what penalties benefit anybody. I think what I can say is Optus is doing absolutely everything possible to be transparent, to be on the front foot. We're communicating to every customer individually about which specific fields of theirs may have been accessed, and we're working through that, but we've already communicated to anybody who's had the identity number of a document taken. We've also been working behind the scenes with all the licensing authorities to see what we can do to reissue licenses in the case where they believe that that's necessary. And of course, we've been cooperating with the Federal Police and the Cybersecurity Centre to give them as much information as possible so that we have every chance of catching whoever did this and retrieving our customers' data.
You have almost 10 million Optus customers who are potentially at risk here. How many are now wanting to switch to another telco as a result of this breach?
But look, I think most customers understand that we are not the villains and that we have not done anything deliberate to put any of our customers at risk. In fact, quite the contrary, we're doing everything we can to prevent that from happening.
You've offered current and former customers a one-year free subscription to a credit checking service, but for some people, this breach will plague them for the rest of their lives. Should you extend this assistance indefinitely along with other compensation?
Well, once we understand more about who's taken the data, if we're unable to catch and retrieve it, we can always look at additional measures after that. For now, we're doing everything we can to make sure people feel secure. And the most important thing is that we're putting people on high alert and asking them not to fall for scams. And unfortunately, a lot of the data, the majority of the data that's been accessed is data that is most likely out there already. So it's very important as a good reminder to people to be super vigilant and not to fall for scams or click links that are sent to them in emails or SMSs.
As Optus Chief Executive, the buck stops with you. Have you considered resigning?
Well, at the moment, all we're focused on is protecting our customers. So someone has to be accountable for doing that, and that's exactly what I'm focused on.
And that's the Optus CEO, Kelly Bayer-Rosmarin, and she was speaking with our senior business correspondent, Peter Ryan. Optus, the Australian Cybersecurity Centre and the Federal Police are all investigating this huge cyber breach. So too is the office of Angeline Falk, who's the Australian Information and Privacy Commissioner. Angeline Falk, it's been reported that the hacker has released the details of 10,000 customers this morning and that they'll release 10,000 customers' details every day until Optus gives in. Are you in any position to confirm this?
Sabra, this is clearly a very significant incident and there's great concern in the community. I'm unable to confirm those reports, but what I can say is that government agencies are working very diligently to ensure that this data breach is contained. And what's important is that we are aware that this has occurred and steps can be put in place to try to mitigate any further harm.
Is this the biggest data breach Australian consumers have suffered?
Look, I think it needs to be put in context that there are a number of data breaches that happen globally, but for Australians, I think this is a very significant data breach. The nature of the information that may have been compromised ranges from name and date of birth through to potentially driver's licences and passport numbers. We know that the Australian community is very concerned about the protection of their personal information. Our surveys tell us that. And that data breaches and identity theft are the most significant issues for the community. So this is a significant data breach, and what we need to ensure is both that the response contains this breach, that individuals are supported to respond to it, and that all entities are taking additional steps to secure the personal information that they hold in this heightened security risk environment.
Are you satisfied so far that the affected customers and ex-customers have been told what personal information and data might have been taken?
Well, under the Notifiable Data Breaches Scheme, any entity that suffers a data breach that's likely to result in serious harm must notify my office and also affected individuals. And we can see that Optus has taken a risk-based approach with notifying individuals who have potentially had the most data breached and that their notification is continuing to roll out. They need to tell people what information has been breached and also provide recommendations for the steps that individuals can take to try to further protect themselves. So we all need to be very vigilant at present around scams, organisations who might be being impersonated, text messages that are sent with links. And the community needs to be very vigilant in not clicking on any links in text messages and to make sure that you go to the website and check the source before you take any further action.
Companies currently face a maximum $2 million fine for data breaches, which the Federal Minister for Home Affairs and Cybersecurity, Claire O'Neill, has called totally inappropriate. Do you agree?
I think we do need to look at law reform in this area, and I have made recommendations to government as part of the Attorney-General's Department's review of the Privacy Act. We need to have sufficient deterrence and incentivise compliance with privacy law. I support reform proposals that have sought to align the kinds of fines that I can seek through the federal court with the $10 million threshold that exists in consumer competition law. And I think in that way, we will have a regime that's best able to protect Australians' personal information into the future.
Would you support stiffer penalties, like in Europe, where companies that don't protect consumer data potentially face hundreds of millions of dollars in fines?
I think the level of fine does need to be looked at very carefully. And as I say, it needs to be more than the cost of doing business. It needs to be a real deterrent. And it needs to recognise the significant responsibility that organisations have to protect Australians' personal information. We all need to provide our data every day in order to receive goods and services. And we need to be able to expect that organisations will keep that data safe. And when they don't, that they will face significant penalties for failing to do so.
The minister also told 7:30 last night that Australia is about a decade behind other countries in privacy protections and 5 years behind in cyber protections. Do you agree?
The Privacy Act does need to be upgraded, and as I've said, the Attorney-General's Department's review of the Privacy Act is a significant opportunity to ensure that Australians' privacy law is fit for purpose into the next decade. My office has made recommendations to government to strengthen the regulatory framework to provide additional rights for Australians to protect their personal information and also additional avenues of legal redress. I think that the Privacy Act has evolved over the years, but certainly in this digital and cyber security environment, we do need to strengthen the protections.
Did you advise the previous government as well as the current government that that needed to happen?
Indeed, I did. So the review of the Privacy Act commenced in 2020, and my office has made two significant submissions to the previous government around the need for reform. And we need to really shift the dial away from real responsibility on individuals solely and to put more responsibility on organisations who are the trusted custodians of Australians' data. So I've been calling for a positive duty that would require all organisations to handle personal information in a way that's fair and reasonable. And just as we can expect products to be safe and secure, and when we walk into a building that it'll be appropriately certified, Australians need to have the trust and confidence that there's an appropriate regime that requires organisations to proactively protect personal information.
Angeline Falk, thank you for talking to AM.
Thank you, Sabra.
And Angeline Falk is the Australian Information and Privacy Commissioner. The federal government's strategy to encourage more Australians into driving electric cars will be released shortly. Motorists are waiting to see if there'll be tax concessions to help bring down the price of EVs. But as business reporter Amelia Turzon has found, there's something other than the cost that's holding many people back from buying an electric vehicle.
Okay, so we're pulling up to the council car park right now.
Maurizio Perez is one of the 55,000 Australians who own an electric vehicle.
And it looks like, yes, there is nobody there, which means that we can quite happily charge today, which is awesome.
The Sydney resident isn't always this lucky.
You kind of have to queue up for some of the charging points, especially on Saturday mornings. So you either pick your time at the local council car park when no one's going to be there, or you sit in the queue for a bit.
And after queuing, he has to wait around for an hour or so for his car to charge. He'd like to do all of this at home instead, but there is no power plug for his Tesla in the car park of his rented apartment.
As a tenant, you don't have much of a say into getting the charging infrastructure installed, so you have to go through, get the landlord's permission.
Maurizio Perez first asked his landlord for a car park charger last year.
Now, I didn't really want anything like a fast charger. I just wanted a simple PowerPoint. But even that involved getting access to the mains and then putting in a circuit. Going to take a lot of time and potentially even up to a couple of $1,000 to even install.
Alan Liang co-owns a company that installs EV chargers in private residences, including apartments.
The cost, in our experience, can range from sort of 2 to 4 times that of a home installation. And then the bureaucracy, obviously, of having to deal with a body corporate.
JetCharge tries to negotiate with body corporate managers on behalf of apartment residents.
They basically say, oh, but, you know, only one person is, you know, using and charging off of this. Why does the entire building have to pay? A range of excuses that basically mean that the decision just gets drawn out.
Federal and state governments have agreed that from next year, the National Construction Code will require the installation of EV charging capability in all new apartments. But this doesn't help the millions of people living in existing buildings. Kathy Sherry is a professor of law at Macquarie University who specialises in the issues faced by high-rise residents.
If we want them to have access to electric vehicles and to make their contribution to reducing climate change, then this most definitely is an equity issue. I suspect the most important thing that governments can do is provide templates and guides so that schemes are not flying blind. We're not just putting this responsibility on individual citizens who happen to own apartments.
In the meantime, the federal government is also helping to pay for more charging infrastructure on public streets.
Emilia Turzon. World leaders are gathering in Japan to pay their respects to the country's former Prime Minister, Shinzo Abe, who was assassinated in July. Australia sent a high-profile contingent, but within Japan, the state funeral is deeply controversial, as North Asia correspondent James Oten explains.
They're not the scenes normally associated with a memorial service. But ahead of the state funeral for the former Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, protesters have continued to voice their opposition. Polls routinely show more than half the population are opposed to the service. State funerals aren't normally held in Japan for former prime ministers, so the $17 million Australian dollar price tag is raising eyebrows. And while Shinzo Abe was the country's longest-serving leader, the Conservative PM was also a divisive figure at home. His connection to a religious group known for its aggressive tactics to elicit donations from supporters has only further tarnished his image. Jeffrey J. Hall is an expert in Japanese politics at Kanada University of International Studies.
It's really impossible to explain so much opposition to the funeral without also linking it to this scandal involving the Unification Church.
Shinzo Abe was gunned down during a low-key campaign rally in July. The former PM had previously shown support for the church, which had allegedly bankrupted the gunman's family some 20 years ago.
The media here continues to report on new revelations about conservative politicians, many of them within Abe's faction of the LDP, having sort of shady ties to this church. And this is bringing down public opinion of the LDP and of Abe.
Among Japan's allies, it's a very different story. US Vice President Kamala Harris and Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi will attend, and Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese will be joined by Malcolm Turnbull, John Howard and Tony Abbott.
In my time as Prime Minister, the two outstanding global leaders were Narendra Modi and Shinzo Abe.
He's also credited with inventing the Quad, bringing together Australia, India, Japan and the US.
The Quad is undoubtedly the most important strategic development in the world since NATO.
Shinzo Abe also started to unwind Japan's pacifist constitution.
Abe was really the first Japanese prime minister who wasn't living in the shadow of the Second World War. He was the first Japanese prime minister who wanted Japan to be a normal country once more.
This is James Oten in Tokyo reporting for AM.
And that's AM for today. Thanks for your company. I'm Sabra Lane.
Hi, I'm Sam Hawley, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. His tough talk on immigration has defined his 20 years in politics, but now as opposition leader, Peter Dutton is trying to develop a new public persona. Today, Four Corners reporter Sean Nichols on whether the former police officer from Queensland can pull it off. Keep listening to hear ABC News Daily or find the podcast on the ABC Listen app.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.